This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Doing good. It is wide open. It is wide open. Yeah. It is March, and things are just rocking and rolling. It's been a fun several weeks here, you know, as we talked about last week, just having, you know, our pipe royalty in town with Eric Nording and friends at Rocky Patel Cigars. And, of course, you know, International Pipe Smoking Day was a success. And now we're kind of in that part of the year where we're looking towards spring and on into summer, events coming up. And, you know, pipe smokers are starting to come out a little bit from under their caves and their hibernating areas, you know, where it's starting to warm up pretty afternoons and makes for a good bowl. So yeah, man, things are going great. We're just we're trucking along. What's happening with you, dude?
Oh man, we just had of course we are now in spring break. You don't feel that yet, John David, but you will in the next few years.
That's
here.
The thing. Is that something to be glad about or sad about?
I mean, it depends on how you manage it, right? Like, so, you know, I mean, obviously I've got really the wonderful and blessed opportunity to work from home,
right?
Which is great. It's not always great, but it definitely has its perks. And I would say that one of the perks is during spring break, having the kiddos here and getting to spend that one-on-one time with them is really, really incredible.
Yeah.
The trick to that, though, is managing said work to make sure that, you know, the kids and the work don't collide. So I've been, man, I got to tell you, though, I've prepared this year. I've been, all of my clients have apparently been very motivated because they've all sent in all the audio early on this week. And so we've just been knocking it out left and right. And I think I might be able to give myself a little bit of a vacay here starting tomorrow until the end of the week. So I'm a little impromptu.
Nice. Jealous, yeah, man. That sounds great.
This will be the first spring break that I'm being a dad and entering into the spring break mode of the kids being in school that I think I'm going to really fully enjoy. So I'm really excited for it.
Well, that's great, man. Hope you get to spend a little time outside on the patio and smoke your pipe and all that. That's great.
Oh yeah, no, it should be great, man. Of course, the folks were in town here recently. They brought me some bean fruit coffee, a former sponsor of the show. But you know, I'm gonna give a shout out anyway because they got some good stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
And they brought me some bean fruit, man. But I was like, where's my pipe tobacco? Where's my Squire care package? But then I remembered, you know what? I'm gonna be there in like 2 weeks.
That is so right, man.
That'll be the time to load up. Of course, we got the Lunt to Remember happening on March 28th. Now, man, as listeners know who've been following for the last couple of weeks and anybody who's familiar with kind of the weather in the Jackson area is well aware, you know, the weather has thrown a curveball. You would have thought it was Corona, but no, it's the flooding that really threw a curveball in this event. But I mean, it's still going strong. It's just been like, you know, we've been on our own journey, if you will, our own psychological Lunt, our own logistics Lunt to get to
Lunt.
Said Lunt. Yeah. Update folks on where things are going right now. Of course, no, you know, March 28th, yeah. Jackson, Mississippi is the place, but the details of the Lunt.
Yeah, changing a little bit. We've got a few little last kinks to work out, but we were notified by the park where we were doing the actual Lunt itself that the park is still underwater and they don't anticipate it being ready in time for us to go out there. So we're finalizing an alternative location, which is about 45 minutes to the east of Jackson here, where we will go Lunting in the beautiful nature and then come back to the city. And so that the Lunt will actually take place. It was to take place at 3 p.m. that day. It looks like it's going to take place earlier in the day, probably around 9 or 10. Give folks time to come back in. We'll do a episode of the show there at the shop live, which would be a lot of fun. And then after that, have the great event, man. And it'll be, you know, live music, you know, people, you know, merchandise to buy from our friends at Missouri Meerschaum and Briar Works and Scandinavian Tobacco Group, Lane, STG, and Peter Stokeby. Man, just on through the night, we've got a craft beer tent that we're really excited about and good food and should be a lot of fun. So things are just changing a little bit, but, you know, the details are there. The key is to be here in Jackson on March 28th. We're excited about that. More details to come in the very short days. Get in contact with us, if you want to keep up with it. But please sign up if you're coming at lunting.org. All the information will be blasted out to folks there that are coming. And again, it looks like we'll have a morning lunt just a little bit east of town, and then that afternoon come back as scheduled, here at the Country Squire. So should be a lot of fun, man. We've got folks confirmed coming in from all over the country, and we're really excited about that. So it's going to be a treat. It'll be a treat.
Absolutely, man. I think it's going to be a blast. I'm kind of thinking too, just with the new setup, I'm thinking about like a different kind of take on a Squire Select, where we might have like a few bottles, or I might bring a few bottles for folks to sample and write down what they would pair with the pipe tobacco, because we will have a Squire Select coming up. Yeah. And kind of a user generated, a listener generated kind of Squire Select. That might be kind of fun.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's the daunting task of the one that we choose. You either saying, John David approves, or John David does not approve. So there could be something fun there, but we'll see. It's going to be a blast one way or the other. So come on down to Mississippi. Join us in Jackson, March 28th for the Lunch of the Remember. I, for one, will be waking up bright and early, getting some good old breakfast, probably from could be Primo's, which is right there near the shop. I could. But more than likely,
best cheese grits in the world, man.
Fantastic cheese grits there, but I'll probably be actually picking something up from Broad Street and bringing it so I can eat it in the car. Those breakfast sandwiches they have are incredible. So, by the way, I was just thinking about this. As I like to say, every single show every single episode is somebody's first episode, and for many folks that tune in, they might be new pipe smokers. They might not be as kind of arms deep in the culture. They might not realize what a lunt is, and we probably need to be doing a better job here at the top of the show when talking about a lunt to remember by just kind of telling folks a lunt is literally what you do when you smoke your pipe and you go for a walk, a nature hike. You could be going just walking downtown, but basically the practice of walking while smoking your pipe is called lunting. And there is in fact a lunting society that will be coming to Jackson. And that is kind of that is the catalyst for this big event that is happening. So yes, that is what lunting
That's
is
right.
for you, yep. New deer pipe smoker. And I apologize for not doing the work in previous episodes of letting folks know.
It's funny. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because we've got a lot of folks that, as we've advertised the event and have gathered a lot of, steam for it and everything, folks have been, curious, like a lot of cigar smokers, a lot of just non-smokers are like, hey, I love your shop. I keep up with what you're doing, but what the heck is that? And that's right, man. It's walking and hiking while smoking your pipe, enjoying the outdoors while you're smoking your pipe. Just really pleased to collaborate with Scott Beidler, from the International Lunting Society. You can learn more about his organization at lunting.org. And again, all the proceeds and everything that are going to come from a lunt to remember here on March 28th will go to benefit the Alzheimer's Foundation. So really, really stoked about that too.
Sounds good, man. We've also got, this show that's happening is made possible by our amazing patrons at patreon.com/countrysquireradio. You can become a member of the International Pipe Club that is the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club there. Again, that's patreon.com/countrysquireradio. Shout out to all of our wonderful supporters. And, man, the great thing is that, as a show, we do our best to really, listen to the listeners and kind of, come up with different topics based on that. In fact, this episode that we're going into is actually per request of a listener, and you'll find out more about that here in just a moment. But we do a series that is one of the most listener driven series of anything that we ever do, and that is our pipe culture series. And this is when we kind of take a look at the culture that surrounds the pipe, and a lot of some thematic things about it, and experiences that we might share, some of kind of the imagination that may come around, like what the imagery is that kind of goes with smoking a pipe and that sort of thing. And some people hate that series, and a lot of people love it. And so the great thing is that it is kind of driven by the listeners. And we've been going through a Pipe Culture Places series, with a new episode coming up here in the very near future, where the place, quote unquote place, is going to be the smoking chair. So I'm excited about this, man. Like,
Yeah, me too.
I have a feeling that like there's a lot of different thoughts on kind of like what imagery comes up with the idea of a smoking chair. You know, I'm not necessarily even talking about the materials per se, but you know, maybe the surroundings. Or honestly, you know what? I shouldn't even say that because we kind of like to put it out there
and leave it open ended.
Exactly. So we'll see what y'all come up with. But we want to hear your stories, your thoughts, the imagery. Maybe you've got a smoking chair you love, whatever it may be. And so send those in, show@countrysquireradio.com. You can, of course, send them on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff, which will be at the end of the show. But yeah, help us kind of piece together this idea of the smoking chair. I'm hopeful, John David, that from this series, from this particular episode, we may end up either crafting the most like perfect smoking chair experience.
Ooh, yeah.
Or you ever see that episode of The Simpsons where they try to develop a car and it's like this crazy thing?
No.
It's like designed by committee and it's just a mess. So it could go one or the other.
I think it'll be a lot of fun. Hopefully, you know, we get a lot of feedback. We have a great episode, but then, you know, maybe one of our artisan listeners is encouraged and inspired to go maybe craft the most exquisite smoking chair on earth. So we'll we'll see. And then maybe they gift it to Bo York so he can have it at his new home in Houston. But
are you kidding me, man? I would, depending on how high up it is, which again, that'll be a part of the discussion as well. It might end up being my new desk chair.
A little hobbit chair, right?
Absolutely, man. Well, hey, so look forward to that and just put either pipe culture or smoking chair in the title. And we'll do that. All right, one last housekeeping item before we do jump into this. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, we are in the midst of spring break. And so if you do end up hearing kids in the background and or cartoons and or I sound a little bit different this week, that would be the reason why. I just want to kind of give a heads up going in. And hopefully that won't be a problem, but there it is. All right, John David, this is, like I said, this is going to be an episode that is actually directly from a listener. In fact, this is coming from J.C. Marty. He wrote into the show. He said, John David and Bo, emboldened by Bo's daring claim that every episode is somebody's first episode, I have a request. We've heard episodes on Danish tobacco and Danish carvers, but how in the heck did Denmark become such a prolific location for pipes and tobaccos to begin with? I'd love to hear you talk about the history of why Denmark is Denmark and all other countries just aren't. Maintain your cake, boys. J.C. Marty.
what a fun question, right? And what an interesting observation. You know, we've talked over the years about all these famous pipe makers and tobacco manufacturers and everything, and they happen to have these goofy Danish last names that we're not really familiar with in the States here and other parts in the world. And man, what's up with that, right? And so we, you know, it had this, and you know, it's funny, Bo and I were talking last week on the heels of you know, having Eric Nording around and just all the promotion about that. And, you know, then we had a Nording episode that we talked last week. That was a lot of fun, too, just learning more about him and, you know, and then even getting, you know, folks' feedback. A lot of folks just talking about how much they enjoy their Nording pipes. And, you know, we thought this would be a good time to weave this topic kind of into the conversation. You know, you've got these famous pipe carvers from Denmark that we've discussed, and course, the most famous living pipe maker in the world, Eric Nording, and you know what? Where did this tradition come from? Right? What's up with that? Why Denmark? And you know, other folks have even in the past mentioned it as the pipe capital of the world and all this kind of stuff. And you know, so we wanted to talk about that a little bit. You know, it's funny though. I mean, you want to be careful. Don't tell the English or the Italians that Denmark is the pipe capital of the world.
Because those guys
have some skin in the game too, you know.
Yeah, you know, and so you to be very clear, that's what you said. You just called it the pipe capital of the world. So send at John David Cole on that one. But no, you're exactly right. I mean, there is kind of a you know, where should the crown lie? But I mean, you know, given the fact that, you know, as you just mentioned, we had essentially pipe royalty on display last week and in person at the Squire recently. I mean, like, we show our love to our British brethren over across the sea, right? I mean, like, the whole War of the Roses, that was a thing. You know, House York, even though, I mean, we all know I'm the rightful king of England. That goes without saying. But let me put it this way. You know what? Actually, John David, I got it. If there is a tug of war between these two great, great nations as to who should be the crowned kingdom of pipedom, the sole place that is at the very top, the pinnacle of pipedom, perhaps if England were to, you know, pass the crown back to the York dynasty and rename me, give me my rightful place, then you'd have the co-host of Country Squire Radio as your king. I'm just saying. I'm just pointing out the feathers that would be in said caps. But until that day happens, man, Denmark, you're looking pretty good right now.
You're just holding it hostage, right?
No, not at all. I am just merely pointing out the facts, my friend. That is all I am doing.
And that is nothing to be said of our friends in Italy, our friends in France, even German pipe makers and Japanese pipe makers, American modern pipe making culture in America. So many great centers of excellence in the pipe world. But, we do seem to talk a lot about these Danish people and these Danish companies and traditions and personalities. And there is an undeniable fact that Denmark has a unique tradition, with very specific pipe makers, but this is a small country. Denmark is it's a small country. It's not a large population. They're kind of nestled in the north of frosty Europe there, and we're talking about a country that doesn't produce its own briar. At the time and since pipe making started in Denmark, it didn't really have its own major empire or anything to kind of go out and conquer the world and spread its. That's one thing England can say. It's like, well, we had the British Empire, and so our excellence in a lot of things filtered down through that. But where did the Danish school come from? Where did that develop from? And so we've talked about some of these things before, but you really can't talk about Danish pipe making to begin with. We're going to go back to the genesis of it around World War II, and then kind of come back through and talk about some highlights. But pre-World War II, there were really no pipe makers of any note in Denmark. And so we look at Denmark as this center of excellence in the pipe making world today. But as much as 75, 80 years ago, there were no pipe makers really of any renown in Denmark. And before World War II, almost all the high quality briar pieces came from England. We think of Dunhill and Sheraton, and then of course you had by that point you'd kind of started to see the Savonellis of the world pick up steam there on the continent. In Italy, you had folks like Camoy and Chacombe in France. And so you had other centers of excellence there, but nothing really in Denmark. And of course, at that time, England before World War II was kind of considered the king of that. They were sending their stuff all over the world, and really. Kind of seen as a very trendy, bougie, thing. If you're a pipe smoker and you want the it pipe, right? It's got to come from England type. And so there was a market there in Denmark that needed to be tapped, or at least someone thought that it could be tapped. A guy named Paul Nielsen, who we've mentioned before many episodes ago, he began making beechwood pipes. Briar was unavailable at the time. Because you got to think World War II, Europe is just racked with all this, strife and terror, division, supply lines are interrupted, everyone's focused on not pipe making, but things like food, safety, and, it's the farthest thing for
those
people's
little
minds.
Things. Yeah,
yeah, the small, insignificant things, right? And so Nielsen, during the World War II era, they're not able to get these pipes from England because of all the World War II embargoes and everything else. And so he begins making beechwood pipes there from local materials in Denmark. And then after the war, where he could import briar again, he started. He'd already kind of ramped up his production. He's making these pipes and other goods, and so now he can get real briar. He filled a void that existed during the war. And he's still there, and people are already smoking his pipes, and now he has access all of a sudden to premium materials. And begins producing these factory pipes. And, you know, they're really good. They're kind of starting to catch some steam. And this is coming from a country that didn't really have a pipe making tradition before. And and so he's proud of his stuff. They're getting good reviews. And, you know, he's like, man, we could go toe to toe with the best in the world. Right. So he you know, thinking that, you know, he wants to compete with the best, particularly from the UK and from England. He picks a name for his company that's very, very English sounding and very sophisticated sounding, and he creates a whole lore around it. And that company is what we know today as Stanwell Pipes. And so he took a, you know, just his name, you know, didn't have that kind of British you know, ring to it, with, you know, horses and carriages and castles and all this kind of things. He wanted to evoke some of that, right? And so Stanwell was born, and of course even their logo evoked that horse and carriage kind of thing. They were looking for kind of this, you know, civil, Victorian, Edwardian, you know, motif that they could kind of play on. And it really hit because the quality of their pipes were great. High quality pipe making factory, the first there in Denmark. They went almost immediately toe-to-toe with the likes of Savinelli, Peterson, GBD, Kamoy, Chacombe. These were pipes that were, you know, as far as factory pipes are concerned, you know, became world-class pretty quickly. And so they kind of kick-started the pipe-making culture there in Denmark. And so you had all these people smoking pipes. They were proud of their country. They were smoking Danish pipes and new folks working at the factory. And it kind of created this cottage industry around pipe-making there in Denmark there in the mid 20th century. So just a really cool kind of spark there that happened because this man named Poul Nielsen had an idea. He wanted to make Danish pipes. He saw a void during World War II that he could fill, and he filled it. And then when he was able to get the best stuff, he went for the best markets. And eventually, kind of funny, he actually changed his name from Poul Nielsen to Stanwell, which is kind of cool. So,
man,
he was committed.
Well, it's almost that reverse of what we're talking about with Eric, you know, just the idea of like, well, you know, this was his name and he has ownership. It's like, yeah, that's a big, you're putting a lot on it, you know, whereas Stanwell's like, well, let's you know, British, let's go with this. Oh, it worked. Yeah, I'm Stanwell. What's up?
Exactly.
No shade, right? Just saying that's what happened.
No, it's funny. Yeah. And, you know, with Mr. Nording, it's like, yeah, we made these awesome pipes. My name's on them. So it's got to maintain the quality. And he's like, you know, with Nielsen, he's like, man, these pipes are so awesome. And I want to be associated with that. I'm gonna change my name. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Really funny. And you know, to make note, Stanwell pipes are still made today. They are considered Danish designed, but they actually are made in Italy now. And just as the pipe industry has kind of consolidated and you know, groups have closed. We have heard over the past year that Lorenzo has closed, and you know, troubles at factories like Bouchoquin and others. You know. You know, a lot of these little factories are consolidating. And so, you know, you've got a factory in Italy that makes pipes under the Stanwell name, also makes Aldo Villani and a variety of others. And you see a lot of this kind of consolidation now, which is happening. But still, a lot of those same shapes are manufactured under the Stanwell name, and the tradition is carried on. So you've got this factory, you know, premium factory experience there that is working, competing with the best in the world right here after World War II. You know, so that's one element of the Danish story, the Danish miracle in pipe making. The second, you know, Danish design. When you say Danish design, number one, what does that mean? But also, you know, where did that come from? I mean, there's an essence in which, you know, this was it was known to just kind of develop its own character, and it caught. You know, caught the attention of pipe makers and smokers worldwide. And now if an American artisan creates a pipe that is Danish inspired, we kind of know what that means. It's a little hard to describe, but we kind of know what that means. What does that mean? It's a unique way, you know, when you think of British designs, you think of a straightforward billiard, pot, bulldog, Canadian, you know, these designs that are clean lines, very structured, and just very classic and simple. You know, and the folks at Denmark, they kind of developed this unique design element that took some of those, but kind of tinkered around the edges of them. They're aggressive, organic, whimsical looking. A lot of if you could kind of take a pipe shape and almost make a caricature of it, that's what Danish design kind of turned into in some sense. And even you know, inspiration from nature itself, from vegetables and you know, tree bark and just all these kind of interesting things that you know, that developed over time just in the Danish pipe making kind of mindset. So these were unique to Danish pipes for a while, but because they were so strikingly you know, visually pleasing but also comfortable in the hand, and you know, it required a lot of skill to make, they became popular worldwide. And so, you know, you've got these Danish inspired pipe carvers now, you know, specifically in places like Japan and Russia, Eastern Europe, the United States, and really all over the world. So pretty cool. Paul Nielsen discovered when he had his Stanwell shop, a little known pipe repairman and pipe maker hobbyist that was primarily a pipe repairman, but had started to make some of his own pipes kind of on the side. And you can't really talk about Danish pipe making, well, number one, without mentioning Stanwell, but number two, without mentioning a person we've talked very much at length before on the show, and that is Sixten Iversen. Sixten Iversen, you know, this is a young man, a young pipe repairman that is kind of discovered by Paul Nielsen, and he's like, man, this kid is producing some good shapes. He's really, you know, makes a high quality pipe. They're, you know, the mechanics of them are really good, very sophisticated, you know, engineering and designs. And I want this guy to work for me, or at least I want to purchase some of his designs to you know, make our factory pipes, you know, kind of inspired by. And so so that's what happens. Stanwell actually bought Sixten Iversen's designs, and it started a relationship where they collaborated over several decades. And that joint power combined there with you've got the probably the most famous and well-respected pipe maker in world history, Sixten Iversen. When he combined with Stanwell, that was you know, innovative and aggressive and willing to invest in young carvers and you know, new designs and innovation and pushing new markets. And so you had these kind of two forces together. And you know, over the next, you know, 40-50 years, it really created kind of this you know, just vortex of excellence there that inspired an entire generation, really two or three generations of Danish pipe carvers. And so pretty cool, heavy influence on the pipe making world. And really, you know, Stanwell and Iversen both instilled a lot of standards in the industry. And so, you know, a lot of folks look to them, particularly Iversen. You know, you had your more premium pipe makers that, you know, sought after his expertise, shadowing. You know, if you were one of his students, you were considered the best trained in the world in this kind of area. And so, and these were not just Danes. These were folks that came from all over and then went back home and developed, you know, apostles of their own. The collaboration bore a lot of fruit. It was kind of an incubator for pipe design and manufacturing techniques. And then the collaboration, it kind of sparked this free flow of information that was unique to the time. You see it some now kind of emerging here, or we have seen it emerging the past 20 years in the American pipe making world. Just a lot of folks willing to help each other, invest in each other. It is so common now to see, you know, the willingness of a pipe maker take on a pupil and, you know, take a chance on a new artisan and kind of encourage them to build up their own thing. Just something that's you know, part of the human experience. You're kind of, you know, helping another artisan, but you're also leaving a legacy because you're doing that, which is a lot of fun. So because of this, this power combo, right, you've got this really remarkable family tree that starts to develop in Denmark. And it's just legendary. The best, some of the best names in the pipe making world. develop from this relationship. And you've got Stanwell and Iverson. Iverson, of course, has his own offspring. He births his own lineage who become pipe carvers. Lars, who we've talked before quite a bit about, and then Nana, who is still living and still producing pipes occasionally, and then you know, from that we've got the Jess Chenoweth of the world, and Paul Rasmussen's, who eventually lead to Tom Eltang, which is one of the current most well known pipe makers in the world, just very very high end Danish pipes. Other factories popped up inspired by Stanwell. W. O. Larsen, tobacconist in Copenhagen, was began making their own pipes as well, and so you had Svendbang that came from that school. Folks he collaborated with went on. People like Preben Holm emerged became marketed by other companies and discovered by other companies, where they were creating these designs it really pushed by distributors across the world to be some of the best. And so it was a combination of marketing, distribution, and quality kind of all put together. Folks were finding that these Danes, just for whatever reason, really kind of knew what they were doing, which is really, really cool. And leads to, the folks today that we know, folks like, of course, we have Eric Nording, who's one of the Godfather types, but Tom Eltang, who is of a younger generation, and Paul Winslow, people that kind of, Winslow came from Preben Holm. And these are folks that, again, are following these aggressive, organic designs where they're willing to push the envelopes and don't feel tied so much to a sense of history. Their sense of history is that it's they have an innovative DNA, right? The story goes when Sixten was working on some of his first freehand pipes, he's like, why take the bark off the top of the pipe? Let's leave the bark on there. And before you know it, you've got a pipe where you've got the gnarly plateau that's left on the top of the pipe. And for some reason, no one had ever thought to do that before. But now everybody does that, and it's and that all is birthed in that kind of Danish spirit of innovation, and which is really cool.
That one in particular, though, sometimes I wonder, did that truly come out of innovation, or was it innovation born of laziness? You know what I mean? Just leave it. Let's see what happens.
And you just you don't know. The story goes, he was done with pretty much every other part of the pipe, and the plateau was left. He was ready to kind of take that off and make the pipe a traditional regular shape. And he was inspired by it. He was like, this is beautiful. Why do we have to remove this? Why do we do that? Maybe let's leave it and see what happens. See how it smokes. See what the people, the end consumer thinks of it, how it is held in their hand.
And the fact that he wanted a nap and a sandwich had nothing to do with it. So absolutely. No, I'm just kidding. No, you're exactly right.
I know, right? Yeah, he's like, leave good enough alone. Yeah. No, that's it. It's kind of funny, just how that's developed. And really the invention of the freehand pipe. Now, this is such a weird concept. I mean, because we're now freehand pipes are just, we all know what a freehand pipe is, but and when we say freehand pipes, we mean a pipe that isn't following a specific shape. It's not trying to be, this template or that template. It is a pipe that is inspired, first and foremost by what the designer sees in his mind, but then secondly by the grain itself of the pipe and the beauty of the piece of wood and what the artisan thinks that that piece of wood can do and how aggressive they want to get. So it's just a freehand pipe. It's like kind of like a dealer's choice type thing. It's like, well, take this piece of wood. And, what's the old thing with Michelangelo pulling David out of that block of granite or marble or whatever?
Sure.
Just seeing what pipe is lying in there. And so the invention of the freehand pipe, how that develops, that's a Danish concept. That's an Iverson concept that You know, we're following the grain. We're not being, you know, straitjacketed to, you know, these designs that have been around for 100 years at that point. We're trying new things and seeing where it goes. And it's not just a work of art. It's a functional piece that is, you know, it's still going to smoke cool and be comfortable in your hand and durable and all these other things. And so just really neat how that's happened. And of course, that freehand element, that freehand style has just proliferated in the Danish school and then moved across the world. And when we think of those freehand pipes today, we think of Erik Nording, Tom Eltang, Preben Holm, people who over the past, 40 years have kind of, you know, just been the icons in that world, taking, you know, this design, this high quality, and then, you know, manufacturing it at a broad sense where it's available to the everyman, even in places like Jackson, Mississippi. So, yeah, just really, really cool. One other thing I'll mention before we kind of wrap this up, and it just our ode to Danish pipe culture, but we've talked about pipes today. We've talked about the artisans and some of the companies that go along with that. But what we haven't talked about, what could be its own its own thing, is the smoking culture in Denmark and the strength of that and you know, going back, you know, at the same time we kind of started our dialogue today, that, you know, pre-World War II era, there wasn't a real tradition of tobacco manufacturers there in Denmark, but that kind of slowly came along, and they were inspired by their folks across the English Channel and other parts of Europe, but particularly in Great Britain, they were inspired and challenged and motivated to compete with those folks, and so you had the Peter Stokkeby, the Mac Baron, these Scandinavian groups which have now are considered the best blending houses in the world, right? Which is just so interesting. And so, you know, that didn't exist, but kind of came along at the same time as we had this this really high quality pipe making scene start to emerge there in Denmark. And so these things are kind of progressing at the same time. But the tobacco manufacturers in Denmark are a big part of this. That their evolution is a big part of the Danish School of Excellence. And so, you know, we looking back on it, you know, you've got these big English companies that are pumping out the best tobaccos in the world. We think particularly of Dunhill, and what's funny is, you know, Dunhill as a tobacco manufacturer doesn't exist anymore, and who bought the rights to all those blends and started at first manufacturing those blends and then claiming them as their own? Well, the companies in Denmark did. So in some sense they really kind of have taken over that as well, and even some of our most beloved brands here on this side of the pond, like Lane and, all the Captain Black folks and a lot of the best known, over-the-counter tobaccos in the world, hamster cage tobaccos, if you will. A lot of these are, right. Some of the most, the most consumed pipe tobaccos in the world, and they're all owned, or many of them anyway, by Danish companies. And so a lot of roads lead back to Copenhagen. A lot of roads lead back to Denmark. And there's a whole, variety of reasons for that. But why is any place famous for what it produces? Well, a lot of times, it's just a specific confluence of events that happens and makes things special. And that happened in Denmark. It happened around World War II. And we can go back and thank folks like Paul Nielsen and Sixten Iversen for that. So next time you smoke your Stanwell, or if you're one of those lucky people that has an Iversen pipe, nod your head and toast the Danes.
Absolutely, man. And you mentioned, of course, the events kind of falling into place, but you also said it's people coming into place and being willing to collaborate. And that's always something that I think that the more collaboration in any industry, but especially in the pipe industry, then that really does reward the consumer in an amazing way. And let me tell you, somebody who has always been willing to make some incredible collaborations are the good folks over at Missouri Meerschaum.
That is right, man. Missouri Meerschaum, of course, is America's most famous pipe manufacturer and a big sponsor of the show. We're so thankful for them. And in kind of the vein of this Danish design that we're talking about. We're going to recommend a pipe that we talked about last week as well, and really hope that you look for on the market and add to your collection. We're talking, of course, about the Freehand Corncob Pipe from Missouri Meerschaum, a deep conical-shaped bowl, dark stain coating, rusticated bowl, and Italian acrylic bit give this pipe a unique and distinctive appearance. Like our other premium pipes, the Freehand has a genuine hardwood insert in the bottom of the bowl, and it's also available in an uncoated natural white cob or natural red cob finish. This pipe also serves as a memorable gift to discerning pipe collectors. It's kind of cool. You can actually buy one of these pipes that are mounted on a red cedar plaque, which is just makes a really nice gift, a handsome decorative piece for someone's office, and also something that's functional and cool smoking and a great statement piece. Man, the beautiful Freehand Corncob Pipe from Missouri Meerschaum. You can get it straight from the source at corncobpipe.com. Check it out and make your selection. Have it shipped to you this week.
Absolutely. And if you've got one, be sure to smoke it this week. Tweet it out to us. We love to retweet it out to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know. We appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, man. Pipe question of the week. I'm trying something a little bit different there.
You're doing great, bud. You're doing
a little
great.
Game show action. I don't know. I don't know why. I was just feeling game show.
Maybe. And behind door number three, pipe question of the week from Monty Hall.
No, not from Monty Hall. This is actually from Byron Fist, man. Byron writes in. He says, great afternoon, gents. I says, I have multiple pipes in my collection, two Petersons, two Savinellis, and three Missouri Meerschaums. The Savinellis are an unfinished one, which is kind of my daily smoker. And then there is a Christmas 2017 one with a gorgeous white stem and red collar. And I broke it. I've had the worst luck with this particular pipe because, in fact, it's actually my second one to buy. The first one was identical, but I lost it, and so my wife bought me this one to replace it. I was out in the garage the other day and was about 25 minutes into an intermittent smoke, rather. So not just straight puffing away. Pipe was warm but not burning hot, and I dropped it. Probably from the height of about 2.5 feet. So my question, and thanks for staying with me here, I would expect the pipe of this quality to have a little bit more durability. But am I wrong here or crazy? I understand that they aren't indestructible, but I feel like that the height, I wouldn't expect it to just snap. The wood where it broke did seem a little dry. Is that a thing that happens in some materials that they can just dry out? Thanks again, gents. Prayers always for you and your families. Hope y'all are out there having a day. Byron Fist, ladies and gentlemen. Absolutely. That's a great, great question. And I'm so sorry that happened to you, brother.
Yeah, good question, Byron. Man, I hate that. That particular year, it was a really nice Christmas edition from Savinelli. Every year they have their St. Nicholas pipe that they come out with.
And in 2017, it was a very good year. A very good year for Christmas Savinellis.
And actually, I think that was the last year, if I'm remembering right, that was the last year of McClellan's Christmas Cheer, I think, too, when that came out.
Oh, wow, man.
Yeah, kind of crazy. But that particular pipe, red, white stem with that little red collar, real attractive pipe. But I know you're thoroughly disappointed, that your pipe broke. And again, I'm not really clear. You said it snapped, not really clear, where exactly that broke on the pipe. But, to be honest,
it was on the stem. He did send some pictures along with it. It is a tragedy to look at.
Oh, okay. Okay. To be honest with you, I'm not surprised. I mean, we are talking about, premium products here, but we're also talking about, materials that are relatively delicate. Briar is a durable piece, but the stem, when you get into these high-end acrylics.
Actually, man, he even sent us a picture. You've got it in your hands right now. I just forwarded it on to you so you can get surgical look, as it were. It is a tragedy.
It is a tragedy, man. Yeah, these are, of course, beautiful pipes, that were you know, made by Savinelli that year for their Christmas edition. And it is a premium pipe. It's one of those things where, you know, you would hope that it wouldn't, you know, wouldn't have that. We do see this occasionally. What we're looking at here, his pipe was broken on the shank. A lot of times when you drop a pipe, you would expect it to break at one of its most weakest points, which is the junction of the tenon, the part, the little, you know, kind of plasticky part that sticks into the wood. You would expect it to break there, the tenon and the mortise hole, that kind of connection right there. A lot of times the stem will snap, leaving the tenon kind of stuck in the end of the briar pipe. This one, actually, what happened to Byron's pipe, the shank broke, you know, halfway up the up the shank, and so, you know, halfway between the stem and the actual bowl of the pipe. You know, this is a straight billiard we're looking at here, very kind of clean cut, simple shape, and it just split right down the middle. you know, is this obviously, you know, Byron, this is something you're incredibly disappointed about, and I understand that. I get it. Is this unheard of for a very premium pipe to break, even dropping only, you know, 2.5 feet? You know, even though you have it, you know, dropped it from 2.5 feet, you know, yeah, I mean, we have seen this before, you know, particularly if it hits a concrete or a brick floor or, you know, something of that nature. You know, it can happen even to the most premium, you know, briars. And again, you talk about drying out, you know, if the wood's dried out, you know, when pipes are cured, the briar is, you know, intentionally dried over time. Now, what may have happened in this case is that they manufactured a pipe that had, you know, a weakness there at that certain area. So, you know, Mike, is this a pipe defect? It could be, but at the same time, I don't think, you know, that because the pipe was dropped, you know, I doubt it's something that they would necessarily cover, you know, if you wanted, you know, to ask the manufacturer about it or something like that. Savinelli's good about standing behind their products, but, you know, because the pipe was dropped, and there's no way to tell how hot the bowl was and all that kind of stuff, you know, there's just probably a likelihood that they would not stand behind that particular misfortune. But I don't know. It may be worth, you know, looking out or at least asking them about. But yeah, occasionally we do see this. There may have been some little weakness there in that particular briar. And so, you know, are you crazy to be disappointed? No. Like, and maybe wanting the pipe to have been a little more durable. Man, no, not at all. I totally understand your frustration there. One of my dear friends dropped my Sheraton one time. One of my Sheratons, I have several, but the most prized one in my collection. and it didn't split. And when it didn't split, I was, you know, I caught my breath and was incredibly thankful. You would hope that would be the case for any premium pipe that you do drop. And sometimes it isn't. And so, you know, depending on how it hit the concrete or, you know, if there was some kind of little fissure or weak spot in the wood, there's just no way to tell. So, I would, you know, typically maybe expect a little more from a pipe like that, but there's no way to tell if it was a manufacturer defect or not. So, be disappointed, but by all means, don't quit buying Savinelli's. I'll leave it at that.
Fair enough. And hey, buyer man, just again, hate that situation for you, but thanks so much for writing in your question. And hey, if you've got a pipe question of the week, be sure to send it in show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Hey, and Bo, I'll mention real quick to Byron, this pipe, if you've still got the pieces of this pipe, which it looks like a pretty clean break, actually. It's just right down the middle there of the pipe. There's actually a chance that this pipe could be salvaged, which may be hard for you to believe. But if you will send this pipe to someone like Tim West Pipe Repair or Reborn Pipes, Norwood's Pipe Repair. There's so many different ones out there. you know, Briarville, you know, they may actually be able to put a nickel or sterling band around this pipe, and the pipe would be, you know, pretty attractive, I think, actually, if you did that. And so, you know, if it's worth it to you, if it's a pipe you really enjoy, you've got broken in, talk with one of those folks, send them some photos, see what they can do. I've seen, you know, some of these, you know, briar repair, pipe repair folks work miracles, and this pipe may have some life left on it, so try it out.
Absolutely.
Quick fire with the squire.
All right, man. Quick fire question.
Ow!
Man, I think both of our voices were kind of struggling there.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. All right. So as we started off last week, we're doing for the month of March, we're doing quick fire questions a little bit differently, kind of bracket style. Now, last week it wasn't a true bracket style. This week it will be more in line with that. And, you know, again, I don't know how this is going to translate into an audio context, but we're going to try it. The theme of this week's March Madness bracket, what quick fire, what have you, is eggs.
Eggs. Okay, yes. Great.
All right. So for our first, what do you call it? When match, is that right?
the first bracket, the first round, first round.
All right, first round. That's the one. All right, first round, scrambled versus boiled.
Scrambled eggs. I'm gonna go with scrambled.
Okay. I mean, in terms of preferences. Definitely scrambled, but in terms of like quantity consumed lately, boiled, and this is true, boiled eggs are actually, that is the healthiest way to consume an egg, is that it's been boiled.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so like literally I've been working on some things, been trying to be a little bit more healthy at the start of the year, especially since I've been off my leg. And and I've done good, man. Actually, I've lost 12 pounds since the beginning of the year.
Oh, that's great. Congrats.
Pretty proud about that. Yeah. But I've been having a boiled egg every single morning for breakfast. And so I have been having a lot of boiled eggs. But no, scrambled definitely takes the cake in terms of better. So there. All right. So scrambled moves on to the next round. All right. So the second round to figure out who versus scrambled is over easy versus fried.
Okay, so when you say fried, you're probably, because over easy kind of is fried, so you're talking about like a well-done fried egg versus the over easy fried egg. Is that
is
what
correct, sir. Yes,
okay,
sir.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with over easy. Is there a potential risk of, you know, salmonella or something? Yeah, who cares? Over easy eggs taste so good, man. You dip your toast in them, and they go, you know, you put them on top of a hamburger and all kinds of stuff. I love over easy eggs.
Wow.
I'm gonna go with that.
So I'll do like an over medium, but there's something about over easy where it's just a little too runny, and I can't do it. Like the texture of it just does not land right on me.
Okay.
Especially it's when the whites are so like still very like liquidy. That's when it really...
Even the whites, yeah.
Yeah, not a fan of this. So I'm going to go with fried. All right, okay. So for the grand championship for you, you have got scrambled versus over easy. Who do you choose?
I love this. I'm going to go with over easy. I love over easy eggs.
You got
I think
over
they're,
easy going all the way.
They're versatile. Uh-huh. Yeah, man, you can do so much with them. Like a, I don't know. I'm gonna go with over easy.
Interesting. Well, I'm going to go with scrambled. I'm going to give it to scrambled all the way on my end, just because, you know, you talk about versatile, man. You can put anything in a scrambler. That's just an omelet needing
that's
some
true.
Additions. You know, it's you could do a lot there. So I'm going to go scrambled all the ways. All right, there you go. That was our egg bracket.
Egg bracket. And we lost all our listeners.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's what quickfire questions is for.
That's it.
Gives you a section of the show to tune out if you want to. But anyway, yes. I made a little bracket. I'll put it up. I don't know. If y'all want to like mess around with it, by all means, go for it. We'll continue to do this throughout the month of March.
It's March Madness, baby. Yeah,
absolutely. Possibly never again, but there you go. Hey, if you got some quick fire questions that you want to send us, or maybe you've got a little bracket you want us to do, keep it to like four, but send it on in at show@countrysquireradio.com.
your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
All right, man, listener feedback from the Smoky Dragon. Says, hey guys, just like to ask you if you or any of your listeners have ever smoked toke. Do you know what this is? Toke?
I don't, actually.
According to Smokey, it's a very old Dutch tobacco cured in wine. Says I smoked it back in the late 60s and early 70s. I have just got hold of the last seven tins, all sealed and never been opened. When the factory was bought out many years ago, it was broken up and sold off. A guy bought the last stock. Now he has closed down, and I got the last seven tins. I was just wondering if anyone else out there have tried it. Also, as you can imagine, it was rare, but now we are talking unicorn rare. And as of the last 710. So that's again from Smoky Dragon. That seems worth looking into right there, to be honest. That might be a show in the future. That's fascinating.
If we have anyone, some of these old time listeners that have been smoking a pipe, since before you and I were born, Bo.
Yeah.
Tokay, Tokay tobacco is what the Smoky Dragon is referring to here. Dutch tobacco cured in wine. I'm not familiar with it, and I actually did not read this question before we recorded the show today. Otherwise, I may have tried to research this or something. But if this is something you aged tobacco smoker are aware of, we'd love to love to hear that in future listener feedback. So Smoky Dragon, what I want to know is, are you going to crack one open and try it?
Yeah,
and I encourage you to do that.
please, by all means, please update us on the progress there. Man, we also got an iTunes review in from Chaplain Corey. This is kind of a bump up, a little bit of an update. It says 2 years later, and I'm still, this is still my favorite, talking about the podcast. A pleasant time with old friends. That's what the Country Squire Radio podcast feels like. I discovered this podcast while on my first deployment to Afghanistan. As a chaplain for the infantry battalion, I have had countless amazing conversations over a nice bowl. When I found this podcast, it felt like I was invited into another great conversation with some like-minded friends. Thanks for a great show. Can't wait to visit the shop one day. And shout out to Chaplain Corey for that iTunes review.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for listening, man. We're glad you're still with us. And brother, we're so thankful for your service. So
absolutely.
Yeah, we appreciate you more than you know.
Yeah, we love those iTunes reviews so much. Head over to iTunes, write us those reviews. It doesn't cost you a dime to do it. But if you are able to spend a few dimes to help the show happen, head over to patreon.com/CountrySquireRadio, where you can join the International Pipe Club. That is the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club. Also, you can send us your listener feedback and more, especially those of you who also might have this supreme unicorn that is the Tokay tobacco. Man, I really want to know more about this wine-cured pipe tobacco. That sounds incredible. So by all means, send in your feedback. We love getting that in. Show at CountrySquireRadio.com is the place to do it. You can, of course, follow us on Facebook or on Twitter. I'm at TheRealBoYork.
I'm at John David Cole, or you can get us at the shop @_CountrySquire.
Of course, @SquireRadio is the show's handle, but all that information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. Man. Okay. This was good, man. This is always great to not only show some additional love, especially after the side love that the Danish pipe world got last week. This was like direct. I do have to ask, though, because as you pointed out, there is a game of pipes, if you will, that's out there in terms of all these different kind of locales across the world that would kind of consider themselves to be a capital, if not the capital of the pipe world. Are you Team Denmark?
It sounds like, though, Bo, that instead of answering that question, maybe we need a bracket.
Oh, John David, why didn't we think of that?
Well, tune in next week.
No, let's not do that for quick fire questions, but let's consider putting that out before the month is over. That's fantastic. All right, well, stay tuned for more on that. And hey, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.